Welcome to Common Sense Care, parenting gender-confused children with truth and love. The gender industry's so-called affirmative care is their one-size-fits-all answer for everyone who struggles with their gender and sex identity. But in no other area of education, childcare, psychology, or medicine is a one-size-fits-all treatment plan appropriate for every person. I believe that every child is an individual and should be given the treatment that's most appropriate for him or her. Welcome back. I'm Maria Keffler.
And I'm Erin Brewer, and boy, that introduction couldn't be more poignant based on the topic that we're going to talk about today, and that is the new book that Partners for Ethical Care is putting out.
This is your book, and I'm going to say that. This is Erin Brewer's book, and I'm so excited about it. We're going to talk about your book today.
Yeah, it feels so strange because I feel like there have been so many contributors to the book. So it is my story, but I feel like the book is really all detransitioner book, you know, a book for all of us, a book for, you know, therapists, a book for parents, a book for teachers. And it really, the goal of it is to really challenge that idea that there is just one treatment path. Right now, you know, if I were a little kid, I would have been put on puberty blockers and then cross-sex hormones and then had my breasts amputated. I have no doubt that would have been the trajectory of my life. And the fact that that's the only treatment path that these kids have right now is just heartbreaking.
The first time I heard your story was when we were both speaking at a conference in DC. You had flown here. And I remember watching your slideshow and you talking about what happened to you, which you discuss in this book, why you thought you were transgender. But then at the end of it, you showed a picture of you with your daughter when she was just born, your first child, your daughter, and how you realized at that moment that had you continued on a transgender path and perhaps medicalized, you would never have gotten to have your child.
Yeah, and that she is just so precious to me. When I was in high school, actually, I went into a doctor and asked him to tie my tubes because I was absolutely sure I didn't want children. I was absolutely sure. And now, I mean, I just feel so thankful for my daughter. And I have two other children. I have two sons as well. And the fact that they would not be in my life had I gone down the path that kids are being led on now. And thankfully, when I was a little girl, that really wasn't an option. It wasn't even talked about. None of the adults in my life suggested, oh, you probably are born in the wrong body. Let's go ahead and transition you. I had really good support system that helped me to understand where these feelings were coming from. And it's not like I went to therapy and suddenly was fixed, but I learned skills to manage those difficult feelings. And that's something that children now are being denied. One of the other things that just, it gives me nightmares when I think about if I had transitioned, if I had started, you know, been accepted and told it's okay to go to the boys' bathroom, it's okay to present yourself as male. You know, I did my darndest to do what would now be called a social transition, but I didn't have people encouraging and supporting it. And if I had, I just think about, you know, little Erin going into men's bathrooms and going into men's locker rooms and how vulnerable I would be to another sexual assault. And that it disturbs me so much. And I think of these girls who, if they are in those environments and they are assaulted, how they might be even less willing to talk about it and to report it. Because first of all, it would challenge the idea that they're actually a boy. And it would also kind of put at risk their insistence of wanting to go in spaces in these, you know, sex-based spaces and present as a male. And so I have these horrible feelings about how vulnerable these girls are and just hoping that this narrative will change soon.
It reminds me of the mom that her daughter was an autistic daughter, and the daughter trans identified and found out, the mom found out from the daughter that she was using the boys' bathroom at school. And the mom contacted the principal and said, I don't want my, I believe it was a seventh grader, you know, I don't want my 13-year-old autistic daughter alone in the boys' restroom. And the principal came back and said, oh, that's our school policy. Kids can use whatever bathroom they prefer. That's unconscionable. First of all, to allow that to happen, to allow that sort of a dangerous, vulnerable situation to happen, and then to tell a parent, too bad, we don't care what you think. I'm so glad that your book addresses dealing with, you know, the parents, that, you know, your counselor helped your mom to know how to navigate this with you in an appropriate way, not in, you know, today's, oh, you have to affirm it, you have to applaud it, but realistically, you know, these are the things we need to do to help Aaron. And I love that part of the book.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, the overarching message that I'm hoping people get from it is that there really is no such thing as a transgender child. There are children who have gender dysphoria. There are children who have these difficult and uncomfortable feelings, but not one single child is born in the wrong body. They're having difficult feelings. And we as adults have an obligation and responsibility to help them manage those difficult feelings, not to reinforce them and tell them, oh, you're right, you probably were born in the wrong body. And the best approach is to medicalize and to transition and to reject that part of yourself that you're uncomfortable with. That's such a damaging message to give to children. And I'm just shocked at how quickly this narrative has sort of saturated society that there are trans kids. No, there are kids with gender dysphoria, and we have a responsibility to help them manage those feelings, not to tell them that they're transgender.
Right. I love your book for that, is that it presents a true story. This is a true story of a child who had gender dysphoria, attempted to transition, but got appropriate care and appropriate therapy, became a detransitioner, went on to live a healthy life. And this is very counter to the popular narrative right now, which is brought about by books like Jazz Jennings' story, which that book does not tell the whole story. It glosses right over the gender reassignment surgery, doesn't cover all of the trauma with that. Jazz basically split open.
Yes.
The wound split open, and Jazz has had to have multiple reconstructive surgeries. The book doesn't cover any of that.
It doesn't mention that the mother actually threatens to assault him with a dilator to keep that that hole that was created open, because Jazz isn't doing a good job of maintaining it. You know, it doesn't talk about the fact that this child never got the opportunity to examine why he was feeling like he would rather be a girl. He never got that. He never got that opportunity. And so many children these days aren't getting that opportunity. They're just told they're transgender and put on this pathway. And it's heartbreaking.
It is. Your story is heartbreaking. I mean, I know your story, but when I started to read it in Always Aaron, I mean, the first page made me cry. The very first page just broke my heart again. And I thought about how much you've put yourself out there with this book. This has to be difficult for you to open up this chapter of your life so fully and be so vulnerable. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's interesting because I've been wanting to get the message out there about what's happening to children in a way that's accessible to both children and adults. But it is, as you said, it's hard to talk about these very private things. And I never thought I would talk publicly about this. And I hadn't talked publicly about it until this movement had really started taking hold. And I felt like I needed to offer my story my authentic experience as an alternative to what's out there, because I know I'm not alone. I'm not the only one. And as I started speaking publicly, so many other women reached out to me and said they had very similar experiences. So this isn't just my own isolated experience. It's the experience of others who have had this. And there are lots of other underlying causes for gender dysphoria as well. But you know, you mentioned Jazz Jennings. Jazz Jennings has like this whole cheerleading section. You know, go, go, go. Oh, you're so brave. Oh, you're so wonderful. When he tells his story. When I tell my story, I get threatened with death and with rape. I get told to shut up. I get told that my story isn't valid. And so it's really interesting, the different responses. And it's very hard to sort of, I feel like I'm kind of, you know, opening myself up in a way that is very uncomfortable. I would rather not be doing this, but I also feel like I have a moral obligation to talk about what happened to me so that people have that other side of the story. So they know that there's not just this one side, there's not this one approach. And it's interesting because when I first thought maybe I should write a kid's book, my first response was, how can I possibly write a kid's book about what happened to me? It's so awful. I don't want to write a kid's book about it. And then I thought, what happened to Jazz is worse than what happened to me. And he wrote a book about it. And his book is being read in kindergarten classes all across the country. And I thought, if he can write about being told he was born in the wrong body and the appropriate response is to just disassociate himself from his boyness and to become a different person, to take hormones and have surgeries to alter his body in profound ways, that's far worse than what happened to me. And so I thought, if they can read about this, if they can scare children with the idea that they can be born in the wrong body, then there's a way for me to write a story about what happened to me that isn't going to freak kids out, but will offer an alternative narrative.
That's interesting. That's such a positive way to look at it, to juxtapose it against Jazz's story. I remember when you first mentioned that you thought you were going to write a children's book, I thought, how is Erin going to write a children's book about a brutal sexual assault? I really thought, what kind of images and illustrations are going to come with that book? But you did it. You did it in a really tactful, sensitive, and appropriate way. And I think the images that the illustrator did a good job. As I said, that very first image was really powerful and scary, but not in a horrific way that's going to give kids nightmares. I think it works on so many different levels. So can you tell us a little bit about the illustrations and the illustrator?
Yeah, and actually I feel like the illustrator just did a phenomenal job. The illustrator is Bartleby, wants to remain anonymous, but I feel like the illustrations just, it's sort of like I had this story in my mind that was sort of flat and stagnant, and the illustrations just brought it to life. I can't even explain how it's almost like Bartleby was able to get inside my brain and capture the emotional experience in pictures in a way, as you said, that's not horrific and awful that would freak kids out, but in a way that is going to be powerful and perhaps even offer children an opportunity to talk about experiences that they've had that have made them not want to be who they are, that have made them feel like they want to run away. So I have a lot of respect for this illustrator, and Bartleby wants to remain anonymous, and I really respect that. But I also just want to, you know, do a shout out because as you said, I feel like these images are just so powerful, and they just dovetail so wonderfully with the story. Honestly, like you said, when I first started thinking about a children's book, my first response was like, "Ew, that just sounds awful." But when I look at the book now, I feel like it came together in a way that, like you said, I think it's gentle and it provides an alternative narrative that I'm hoping people will be open to. And I'm hoping that teachers will be looking at it and saying, "Wow, I didn't realize that this is a different pathway that kids could be on. I didn't realize that these kids might have something, a deep, deep wound that they need to help heal, rather than, you know, covering it up with a dirty bandage and told that they should run away from themselves. So I feel like, again, like this has been a joint effort, and then Partners for Ethical Care has been so supportive. And I'm excited that people can get it through Amazon as well as on the Partners for Ethical Care website. I'm curious to see how long it stays available on Amazon. I know your book initially came down within about 48 hours, but then Amazon put it back up. So I'll be curious to see what the trajectory is of this book. But if Amazon takes it down, we're prepared. People can get it on our website.
And it's also available at Barnes & Noble right now in paperback. We'll get it up there in digital soon. But yeah, I'm excited to see it out there. I loved one point in the book I wanted to mention, when little Erin is in a group therapy with some other kids, and she hears a little boy talk about a hurt similar to hers, and she realizes being a boy isn't gonna fix it.
Yeah, and that's so powerful. Even now, when I think about it, that running away from ourselves doesn't fix our problems.
Right.
And it makes it just, it's so heartbreaking to me that that's the message that kids are getting now, that they should run away. And I think about that therapy group that I was in with all those kids. We all had serious issues. We were not functioning in school well. We were in need of help.
Yeah.
And if any one of those children had been told, well, it's just because there's something so wrong with you that it's unfixable, that we think you should just become another child, and how much damage that would do. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's, I cry too. I've cried a lot.
Yeah.
About this issue, this industry, what's happening to kids. Sometimes I just lie awake at night and I think about all the children who are being lied to, who are being damaged, and their families. And it's overwhelming. It's just overwhelming, the amount of destruction that's happening. And I want to make a point too. We talked a little bit about how you're really exposing your life, and you're exposing things that most of us would prefer not to share publicly. We see so much of the Jazz Jennings, the Bruce Caitlin Jenners, all of the applause. You know, Demi Lovato just said she's transgender and everybody's applauding that. And you don't hear as much from the detransitioners. You don't hear as much from the families who are not agreeing with this. And the reason is, most people don't want to expose their private lives like this. Most people don't want their kids' private lives, their sexualities, and their innermost wounds and feelings and problems to be exposed to the world. The good families, I feel like I can say that, the good parents are the ones who are trying to protect their kids from exposure, from being victimized over and over again. So that's why you're not hearing these stories. And so that's why I want to applaud you for sharing yours, because I know it's hard.
It is. And I feel so bad for the detransitioners that I talk to. Most of them are a lot younger than me. And the kind of bullying that they get from, you know, people who they thought were friends and family when they decide to transition, the same people who were, you know, celebrating their transition are turning on them when they realize it was a mistake, rather than supporting them and giving them the love and comfort that they need during such a difficult time. So they're afraid to share their story, because it is, you open yourself up to being bullied by these activists. The other thing that for me was hard is that I had to talk to my own kids about what happened to me as a child before this book came out. And that was something that I would rather not have had to talk to them about. They're grown up pretty much. They're adults now, but it was very difficult to sit down and have this conversation. And it was interesting because my older son, he looked at me and he said, "Mom, I knew." And I don't know exactly how he knew, because I hadn't ever explicitly talked about it to him, but there was something about me and the way I am that he knew I had been damaged really quite profoundly as a kid. And so the people who are detransitioning have these incredibly deep emotional wounds, and it's hard for them to get out and advocate for this cause, because they're just trying to survive. And so again, I just felt like I'm in a place where my life is a lot more stable than a lot of these detransitioners. I don't have the medical transition that I have to recover from. I want to be out there and stand up for them. I want to be the voice to say, wait a minute, we need to stop this. No more kids should be hurt in this way.
Well, you have done it. You have done it. This is a beautiful, poignant, important book. And I hope it gets into the hands of all who need it. And I want to put a little plug for anybody who's thinking about buying this book. Partners for Ethical Care will send an anonymous copy of this book to anyone you like. If you'd like to send it to your school, to your local library, to your pediatrician, we have a letter that will accompany it explaining that this was purchased for you as an anonymous gift to help you educate yourself about this issue. So when you come to our website, if you purchase the book from our website, partnersforethicalcare.com, you can select either send the book to me or send an anonymous copy to this person I want to gift to. I'd like to see this book in every school library. I'd like to see it in every public library. I'd like to see it in every therapist and counselor's office, because people need to know this is the truth. This is what's real.
And I also wanted to mention that all profits from this are going back into Partners for Ethical Care, so that they can continue doing the important work of standing up for kids and fighting this this agenda.
Mm-hmm. Well, how would you feel about if I read your book, if I read it out loud to our viewers?
I think that would be wonderful. We actually talked a little bit about this ahead of time, and you asked if I wanted to read it, and I'm not sure I can get through it.
I'm not sure I can either. I might cry a little bit.
It's funny, after all these years, I mean, I have processed it, but it's, you know, seeing it actually, especially again with those powerful illustrations of Bartleby's, it really, you know, it's a different kind of sadness that I have now, because, you know, part of me is actually really joyful that I made it through something that was so hard. I mean, this haunted me for a large part of my life. I feel like it sort of like my trajectory was going this way, and it came along and just completely, knocked me off course. And it's taken me a really long time to process it. So I don't feel a lot of the like triggered or trauma, re-traumatization from it, but it is sort of just the sadness that this does happen to kids. It's still there's kids that this is happening to today, that they're.
Okay, yours is not a unique story.
No, sadly. And that's where I think the tears come from, but also just, there's also under it, just this bittersweet hope that things are going to turn around and change, so that these kids will be getting a different message. So if you want to go ahead and read it.
Yeah, I would like to. I'm going to be reading it. I've got a digital copy. I don't have a hard copy in my hands yet, but it's coming. So I'm going to be reading it off my phone. And I think we're going to put the images up as I read. Okay. Always Erin. When I was a little girl, two men hurt me. I was scared that the hurt might happen again. I thought that the hurt happened because I was a girl. I decided not to be a girl anymore. I told my mom I was a boy. Mom said I could pretend to be a boy. She let me wear my brother's old clothes. I told my teacher I was a boy. She told me I could play with the building blocks and toy trucks. I told my classmates I was a boy. They teased me. I told my friend I was a boy. She told me I was weird and she didn't want to play with me anymore. One time, a bunch of kids ganged up on me. They pushed me into the boys' bathroom. They all laughed at me, but I didn't care. I wanted to use the boys' bathroom. My teacher worried about me. She saw that I was lonely and sad. My teacher asked me to talk to another grown-up at my school. She was the school counselor. I told the counselor I was a boy. I told her that boys were stronger. I told her that boys were smarter. I told her that boys had everything better than girls. The counselor told me that she understood how frustrated I felt because I was a girl. She taught my mother and my teacher ways to help me manage my difficult feelings. My mother took me to an adventure group with other girls. We tied knots. We visited the fire station. We hiked in the mountains. We studied the clouds. My stepdad took me to a class where I learned how to shoot a rifle. I memorized all the parts of my gun. I cleaned my gun. I practiced all the rules for gun safety. I shot at targets right in the middle of a big red circle. My teacher taught me about strong women who did great things. Madame Curie was a scientist who discovered radioactivity. Rosa Parks fought for civil rights for Black Americans. Helen Keller learned to read and write even though she couldn't hear or speak or see. Sacagawea led the early American explorers named Lewis and Clark to the Pacific Northwest. I went to a therapist almost every week. I talked about feeling like girls aren't safe. I talked about being ashamed of my body. I talked about not wanting to be hurt again. At school, I went to a group with other kids who were angry and sad and lonely like me. One boy talked about how he had been hurt the same way I was hurt. He said he didn't want to be a boy because he was scared the hurt might happen again. The boy was ashamed of himself because of the hurt. He thought the hurt happened because he was a boy. I realized that sometimes girls get hurt and sometimes boys get hurt. Being a boy wouldn't stop me from being hurt again. Over time, I learned that no matter how much I wanted to be a boy, I was a girl. I would grow up to be a woman. I wondered what kind of woman I would be. A scientist? A firefighter? An explorer? A mother? A teacher? A hunter? Maybe even a woman who fights for girls' and women's rights. And that's exactly what you are.
And I love that last picture so much. I just feel, as hard as this fight is, and Maria, you're in it too, all the people from Partners for Ethical Care, a lot of the people watching this, you know how hard this battle is. It's not easy. We are called names. We are threatened. Our reality is denied. We are bullied. And yet I just feel so much strength from all of the people who are fighting this battle, who are with us together, fighting for kids, fighting for women's rights, fighting for sanity. Mm-hmm. I feel just completely honored by the people who endorsed the book, a nice diverse group of people mm-hmm. who endorsed the book. And on the last page, it shows some of the strong women who are fighting this battle together.
There are some familiar faces in there. Who else in that? I see Magdalene Burns.
Yes, I love that she's in there.
If you don't know who Magdalene Burns is, look her up.
Yes.
Unfortunately, we lost her last year to a brain tumor, but she was the queen mother of the gender critical movement.
Yeah, she probably isn't appropriate for kids, but we have some good points. And again, one of them was that she would rather tell the truth than to be a liar. And again, that's part of this is being willing to stand up and take the heat for speaking truth.
Yeah. Can we talk about who else is in the?
Sure.
I see Dr. Critella, Michelle Critella, who's the head of the American College of Pediatricians.
And she's been someone, you know, having doctors who, pediatricians who are saying, wait a minute, this isn't right, is so important. And she has really dedicated her career to speaking out about what's happening and to talk about it from a medical perspective.
Mm-hmm. And I see Beth Stelzer, who started Save Women's Sports.
Yeah, she's one of my heroes. For people who don't know her, again, go to her website. She's phenomenal. And she has been spending the last couple months tirelessly fighting for women's and girls' rights to sports, saying biological boys and men do not belong in girls' and women's sports. And wow, what a hero.
Her website is savewomensports.com. Yeah. I really recommend everybody go there. Yeah. And I see the director of the Dysphoric movie.
Okay. So that's Vaishnavi. And she did just the most amazing documentary called Dysphoric that should have millions of views because it's so powerful. And I just would encourage everybody, if you haven't seen it, go watch it. She has a story very similar to mine, those feelings of dysphoria because being a girl wasn't safe for her.
So Vaishnavi Sundar and the Dysphoric documentary, definitely go look at that. And then you, of course, are in the middle holding the No Child is Born in the Wrong Body sign. And I see the gender mapper.
Right. Isn't that great? I'm so glad Alex was willing to be in the picture. For those who don't know about the gender mapper, this is a powerful project Alex is putting together, where she's putting a map of all the clinics that are doing this to children so that we have documentation of what's happening. She also has people calling the clinics and getting information about what age they're doing surgeries on. We're finding out that clinics are pretty, most surgeons are, who are doing mastectomies on girls, are willing to do it to girls as young as 13 and 14 years old. Kids are getting on puberty blockers at 8 years old. Some kids are even getting on cross-sex hormones as young as 8 years old. So really thankful for the Gender Mapper project and for Alex and her work. And if you want more information on that, go to Gender Mapper on Twitter. And we'll put all the connections.
Transgender abuse.
Oh, right. Yes, exactly.
I think it's .org.
Yeah. And she's also been an important part of Partners for Ethical Care, a good colleague and someone who's just tirelessly fighting this.
Thank you so much for exposing yourself the way you have, not just with this book, but with everything you do. You do so much fighting for truth, fighting for kids' protections, and you're a phenomenal warrior. And I'm just so pleased to see this book out. And I think everybody needs to get a copy. Everybody needs to get copies for your local schools, therapists, doctors' offices, and libraries.
Oh, thank you, Maria. And again, thank you for your support. I didn't mention that Maria actually helped tremendously with the formatting of this. She also wrote in the back here, there is a note to teachers and counselors and parents that Maria wrote to provide, some information about what's happening for teachers who don't know what's going on, for parents who don't.
And there's a great resources section in the very back where you can go to get more information, get help if your family's going through this.
Yeah. So I just feel grateful for all the support that I've gotten from everybody. And I hope it makes a difference. I also want to encourage people to get your book, Maria, the Detox, Detrans, Desist book, which really helps parents who have kids who are trans identifying. I'm excited that Partners for Ethical Care is starting to put out these important resources that really haven't been available.
Yeah, I think people are hungry for them because they're asking for more. So Partners for Ethical Care is putting out more and more materials. Visit our website, www.partnersforethicalcare.com. You can get Erin's book there. You can get my book there. You can get lots of other resources there as well.
Well, thank you.
Well, this has been a great chance, a great episode to talk about your book. I'm so pleased. Thank you again for doing it. And we will see you next time on Common Sense Care.
Thanks, Maria.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
We are not doctors or therapists. We are not giving medical or psychiatric advice, and we offer no guarantee of outcomes. We simply want to talk about how to support and love kids using long understood best practices from the fields of psychology, education, and child development. We're glad you joined in our conversation today, and we hope that you took away something you can put in your toolkit for parenting your gender-confused kids with truth and love.